Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you. Gingivitis has been eroding the gum line of this great nation long enough and must be stopped. For too long, this country has been suffering a great moral and oral decay in spirit and incisors. A country's future depends on us on its ability to bite back. We can no longer be a nation indentured. Our very salvation is at stake. Together, we must brace ourselves as we cross over to the bridgework into the 23rd century. Let us bite the bullet and together make America a sea of shining smiles from sea to shiny sea. Now, friends, some people will tell you that this mandatory toothbrushing law is about the secret dental police kicking down your door at 3 a.m. to make sure you've brushed. Friends, it is not. Some will mention the dental re-education centers or the preventative dental maintenance detention facilities. It's about none of these things. It's not about the government-issued toothpaste containing an addictive yet harmless substance. No, friends, it is not even about DNA gene splicing to create a race of winged monkeys to act as tooth fairies. Friends, what this mandatory toothbrushing law is really about is strong teeth for a strong America. My name is Herman Supreme. I'm a friendly fascist. I'm a tyrant that you should trust, and you should let me run your life, because I do know what is best for you. Yes, I'm a politician. I will promise you anything your little electorate heart desires, because you are my constituents. You are the informed voting public, and because I have no intention of keeping any promise that I make. Vote early, vote often. Remember, a vote for Herman Supreme is a vote completely thrown away. I would like to take this moment to acknowledge my mother, who is in the audience here today. Please stand up, mother. Please stand up. If you can stand up, please stand up. She's going to try to stand up so you can acknowledge her. This is my mother. There you go. And 5 years ago this April, I gave her a kidney. My challenge to you people, everybody on the stage, everybody in the audience, give up a kidney.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Supreme. Thank you. The next two-minute opening, Mr. Randall Terry. Sir, you have 2 minutes from Ambassador Shoemaker.
Mr. Supreme, welcome back.
Thank you, sir.
Like some of the other candidates, including former Governor Romney, this is not your, shall we say, first rodeo.
Let us say that.
This is not the first time you have run for president in
correct.
The New Hampshire primary. President Romney has been accused, and I'm not taking a position one way or the other, of taking different positions on different issues. I'm asking you right now, do you still stand by your pledge made in 2008 to provide a pony for every American?
Yes, I do, sir. Free ponies for all Americans, one of the overlooked issues in America today. My free pony platform is, of course, a jobs creation program. It will create lots and lots of jobs once we switch over to a pony-based economy. We'll also lower our dependence on foreign oil. We'll also be able to turn all that pony poop into methane gas and wonderful compost, so we'll be able to up our soil that is being depleted by agrochemicals, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And, of course, the important thing to realize is that it is a federal pony identification program where you will need your pony with you at all times. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Supreme. Thank you, Mr. Green.
All right, folks, this is Rabble Rousing Rich Bergeron.
Yo, yo, yo. It is the icon, the legend, Tornado Tony Pemico.
That was Herman Supreme. And he's a little-known presidential candidate who does it, obviously, for a joke. And if you look up his
video, I like him
on YouTube, it's kind of funny. You have to have your pony with you at all times because the pony with the identification number on its ass. And if it doesn't match the one on your ass, you're in trouble. He's got his whole speech down and he's going to a bunch of events in New Hampshire up here. Kind of a funny guy. Anyway, we have plenty of news that we didn't even get to cover last week. Coincidentally enough, even though we've been talking about it for years, I think, on this show, the money issue finally hit the UFC hard this week with a big report on ESPN. J- generating a lot of hype about, you know, the lack of entry-level money for these fighters. And also, interestingly enough, today I read something about Strikeforce having to pay out more for their last event than they actually made on the fight. So, I don't know. It's a big mess. Basically, I think they're just going to kill it eventually, by killing it slowly, showing how it's continuously losing money so that they have an excuse. But the big story was that ESPN, a guy named Josh Gross, who pissed off Dana White in the past, and another colleague over at ESPN wrote this report, and there's other people speculating in the media that it's because ESPN didn't get the same deal that Fox got. They were gunning for it, and they didn't get it. So, obviously, there's some contention there. But, you know, it's about time somebody raised the issue of money and what these guys get paid. And also, coincidentally, this week, there was a story of a kid who was actually paralyzed in an MMA fight. So it just goes to show you how dangerous the sport can be. And, you know, they just started giving these guys medical insurance. And there's even a wrestling story we didn't get to last week. CM Punk was supposed to jail Sonnen into the ring for this next Fox on UFC on Fox 2. And that's another part of the story, because the new opponent for Chael Sonnen is Michael Bisping, who everybody loves to hate. So it's going to be quite the fight there. But apparently CM Punk is not going to be able to escort anybody to the ring of the cage because Vince McMahon killed the idea. So he's obviously pretty mad at the UFC for some reason, maybe because they won't let Brock out of his contract.
Yeah, I read about a little bit about that last week. Yes, CM Punk right now, he's almost like the anti like John Cena. Obviously, he's the one that the little kids like. You know, he's like the 2000 whatever version of Hulk Hogan, you know, the get you all riled up and everything. Maybe if I was a little kid like I was back during Hogan's heyday, I would, you know, really see the appeal. I like John Cena. I think he does good work. I liked him better when he had, edgier, white rapper gimmick, because I thought he was, you know, just funnier and edgier. Now he's too cookie cutter for me. But CM Punk is a guy because he goes out there and he speaks his mind and he makes fun of people. Comes out there oh boy, you're coming to bore us all again. You're an old man. This and that. And he rips people, but he does it in a legitimate way that it seems like it's real. And that's why I kind of enjoy his promos. They're not as cool as the Stone Cold Steve Austin from back during my rebellious late teens, early 20s. When he would just come out there and tell everybody to go to hell and give him the finger. I really enjoyed that. Which I think I still do. But yeah, I did read about where Punk was not allowed to escort Chael Sonnen into the ring.
Yeah. So it would have been two Punks on the way to the ring.
Yeah, ain't that the truth?
One.
Now, here's the question. Saturday night. This question goes out to you, Rich. Goes out to anybody out there listening. Saturday night, 48 hours from now, what are you doing?
I have no idea.
I don't like the fact that you didn't think about it, and I really don't like the fact that you said you have no idea. You're watching the boxing card on NBC Sports, whatever it is, the former Versus channel.
Saturday?
You can watch it.
I thought it was going
to be on Saturday night, 48 hours from now. Eddie Chambers is out. Right after we talked about the fight last week, and I'm sitting there giving, my take on Eddie Chambers and, you know, what I thought of the fight and, you know, his fight against Lajovic. What happens, Eddie Chambers breaks two ribs. He is now out. In the place, they have two undefeated heavyweights, so that ought to be pretty interesting. I was just reading the article today. I have to pull up their names. One of them, Mark Byram, I know his last name is, and I don't have it in front of me, but his father fought Evander Holyfield. Maybe the son will now fight Evander Holyfield eventually down the road, because Holyfield ain't going nowhere.
Isn't that the guy we already had on the show?
Yes! Yes, it is! Dude, I'm glad you reminded me of that. I'm going to see if I can talk to him on Saturday night. His father fought Holyfield, yeah. His father was Lionel Byram, I think, and I forget his son's name. But I got to pull up all my computer. But yeah, right. We had him on our show. Well, he got bumped into the card. He's fighting another undefeated heavyweight. I'm about to log on a box check, and I'll give you their names. But the fight I want to see is, you always get a good fight when you get a Mexican and a Puerto Rican. It is just, you know, it's like a rivalry. And it could be a guy that's Mexican that was from, like, you know, San Diego, California, and never lived in Mexico and never been to Mexico. And it could be a Puerto Rican from, you know, the Bronx, New York, that's never seen the island of Puerto Rico. They hate each other, and they always make good fights. Well, the one fight on the card that I'm really looking forward to was a gentleman by the name of Jesus Soto Carras. And he had two fights with Mike Jones out of Philadelphia. Mike Jones being a very popular up-and-coming Philadelphia fighter. He's highly ranked. I believe he is the number one contender in the IBF in the welterweight division. And he gave Mike Jones two very tough fights. The first fight, some people thought he beat Jones. He's just, you know, it's a tough, rugged guy. And the guy he's fighting, the second fight, Mike Jones, boxed him a little bit better and controlled the tempo and won more handily. The guy he's fighting this weekend is a fighter by the name of Gabriel Rosado. He's a Philadelphia kid. I know his trainer very well. I talked to Gabriel a few times. And he is a tough Puerto Rican descended fighter, and unlike Mike Jones, who will use boxing, he's just going to come out and, you know, bring it to you. So I'm looking at this card right now for Saturday night. The main event is now Maurice Byram, who we talked to. He is 13-0 with 9 knockouts. He has one draw in there. We had his last fight was in October, which is a first-round knockout. He is fighting a gentleman by the name of Bryant Jennings. Bryant Jennings is 11-0, no draws, 5 knockouts. His last fight was in November, was also a first-round knockout. So somebody's O has got to go. And let me look at the sizes on these guys, because we got heavyweights. So Jennings is 6'2". His last fight, he tipped in at 223 pounds. So, you know, decently sized guy right there. Byram is, he's a southpaw. Does not have his feet lifted. His last fight, he was 247 pounds. So he's definitely going to have a size and weighted, a weight advantage. I don't know about height. So we got to see, you know, that. That ought to be a very interesting fight. Then we go to the fight that I'm most interested in, which is Jesus Soto Carras. He could be our Jesus fight of the week. He is 24-6, has never been stopped, has 16 knockouts. He had the two fights with Mike Jones. The first one was November of 2010. That was on the Pacquiao-Margarito undercard, which was a majority decision. And then the rematch was a few months later in February in Las Vegas, where he lost the unanimous 12-round decision to Mike Jones. he is fighting Gabriel Rosado, who is 18-5. He has one loss by stoppage. That was to Alfredo Angulo. And he has 10 knockouts, which he's actually a better puncher than those 10 knockouts indicate. I've seen him lay some guys out. So those are the two main fights on the card. Let's see what else we got on here, because I saw some very good, interesting names on here. We got a young kid that I covered a few months ago. He goes by the name of the new Ray Robinson. Good young fighter, very tall, 5'10". He looks like he's about 6'4". He fights at 146 pounds, tall, long arms. He is 12-2, 5 knockouts. He is fighting a gentleman out of Lancaster, Pennsylvania, by the name of Doel Cascarillo. Cascarillo. I don't have the Michael Buffer tongue roll down. He is not a great record. He's 16-18, but he's got 14 of those 16 wins are by knockout. His last fight down Atlantic City was a fifth-round knockout victory over a fighter by the name of Shimon Alvarez. He actually has a knockout win over a former guest of ours, Dennis Mama's Boy Doglin. Remember when we interviewed Dennis that night and I told him I knew his upcoming opponent? I gave him a scouting report?
Yeah.
That was Doel Cascarillo, who knocked out the Mama's Boy.
Oh.
Mama's Boy has since rebounded. He had a win on ESPN a couple weeks ago.
I watched that.
So that would be good. Yeah, so did I. That would be a good fight. Because this kid, known as the new Ray Robinson, a lot of talent. Interesting, big young fighter. Also on the card, we have a fighter that I got to see a few months ago by the name of Corey Pritchett. Corey Pritchett, 1-1. He lost his last fight by unanimous decision after winning his pro debut, which I covered down the National Guard Armory. He reminds me a lot, almost like a young Dwight Muhammad Cowie. Short, compact guy, very muscular in the upper body, very strong jab, very physical. His attributes are backing his opponent up. A lot of head movement. Sometimes I think he uses a little bit too much upper body movement, and he wastes energy. That's from what I saw in his pro debut. Maybe that could have been a little bit of nerves too. But I was impressed. He won the fight. He fought a guy that night by the name of Corey Sloan. So I said it was, the boxing version of the two Coreys. So we got a good 7-fight card down there. It's going to be televised on, NBC Sports, which is the former Versi channel. I got my tickets. I am waiting. I actually talked to Russell Peltz's secretary yesterday. And I also talked to that girl, Brittany, where I asked her when she's getting on our show again, or when she's getting on our show, period. I'll see her Saturday night. And we'll see. They got to get me my press pass. And we'll go, We'll go down, get me a good cheesesteak, get Tony Luke after the show. It'd be a good time. What's great was I've been having some issues at work. I don't know if you've seen any of my cryptic Facebook statuses. People have been pissing me off a lot lately. The new branch manager is a big fight fan, and he knows I'm kind of pissed off at everybody. He pulled me aside the other day. He's like, "Yo, man, come on, relax. Everything's going to be okay. Just cool off, relax." I'm like, and I'm sitting there giving him the, "I don't want to talk to anybody," routine, like, just get out of my face. So he was coming back from lunch the other day when I was on the phone having lunch myself, getting my tickets. And I looked at him, I said, "I am the man." He's like, "Why?" I said, "My smooth talking ability just got me good seats at the fights." And I said, "They're hooking me up with a press pass." I said, "The tornado will be there in full effect." He's like, "Oh, when's the fight?" So I'm like, "Saturday, man." "Oh, what's the number to get the tickets?" And I'm sitting there, like, telling him all this stuff. "Maybe I'll go." I'm like, "Yeah, you should go. Because that'll be a chance that he can see me outside of the work environment, And then I won't be in such a bad mood. I'll actually be in a good mood. But then I can also tell him why the company he just signed on to work for sucks.
There you go.
I thought real quick, if it was legal to kick somebody's ass and use the defense that they're an asshole. It was great. Here's what I said. I'm pulling it up now. I actually gave the I wish you could legally kick somebody's ass and use the he's an asshole defense. I can just imagine the courtroom scene. Mr. Pennicale, you are charged with bitch slapping the plaintiff, giving him a wedgie and sticking his head in the toilet. How do you plead? Not guilty, Your Honor. We have several witnesses who saw you do it. What is your defense? He was an asshole, Your Honor. I did a public service by kicking his ass. The court agrees. Case dismissed. I actually put that out there for a couple people that I am currently in the process of dealing with that I'm not too happy about.
Well, don't go postal.
I will work with post office. Don't worry about it.
All right.
No, I mean, if I did anything, it would just be using thunder and lightning over here on my big left and my big right.
Well, there's going to be a fight in Las Vegas that I'm going to miss this week. This Friday, it's going to be Showbox in Vegas again at the Palms Casino Resort. I heard that Andre Ward's going to be sitting in with our buddy Steve Farwood this week.
All right.
Rico Ramos is going to be fighting in the main event, super bantamweight. He's 20-0 with 11 knockouts, fighting Guillermo Rigondeaux, who's 8-0 with 6 knockouts. And so the WBA World Super Bantamweight title. Can you believe it? And there's some shit going on Saturday, of course. He already gave us the Jesus fight of the week. Now he's just got to find the mismatch of the week.
I know. I'm going to the Jesus fight of the week. How's that sound?
Ringside.
Yeah, I know. Ringside. Dude, you know what would be great?
What?
If they have a local Philadelphia boxing card and Ali Chiba fights on it. That would be awesome. I've never even seen the guy. I just love his name.
Yeah, that's a good name.
Good name. You know what would be even better than that? Going to a local Philadelphia card that Ali Chiba is fighting on, and he's fighting a guy with the name Jesus, a.k.a. could be our Jesus fight of the week, and the guy has a record of like 0-25, so it could be also a mismatch fight of the week. I would get all 3-1. I have to get a prize for that.
That would be definitely. We were supposed to give away a prize last week, believe it or not, but we were so jam-packed with technical difficulties and interview time that I didn't put it out there.
It was a good interview, too.
Yeah, it was. But basically, we have 3 copies of the movie Killer Elite, and we're supposed to give them away. I actually don't even have them yet. They're on the way. But anyway, we're supposed to do a contest. So we get a contest on the top 2 picks of the 2 matches in the UFC 142 fight the other day. And it turns out nobody actually got the full correct answer. One guy got the right ending for one of the fights. Everybody got the right ending pretty much for the other fight, but not the right round. But Jose Aldo knocked his guy out in the first round, destroyed him. And Vitor Belfort submitted his guy, and then the UFC threw him out. Our former guest, Anthony Johnson, got booted from the UFC for that fight. So actually, it was because of weight situation, I guess. He bumped up to 185, and he couldn't even make the weight for that. And it was apparently the 3rd time that happened. So Dana White threw him out. But anyway, only one person even responded with an address to send the DVD to. So we actually have 2 DVDs to give away. So I was coming up with a question that maybe nobody could look up online about us. And actually, it's a good thing we didn't do it last week because you were talking about your school up and down. But since we talk about it all the time on the show and only people who listen a lot would know, if somebody can come up with the exact place we went to school in Barstow, then give him a prize. But that means you can't talk about your school all show, Tony.
I won't talk about my school all show.
All right. So if you email info@unlimitedfightnews.com with the answer to that question, where did we box when we went to school and college, then you'll get one of those copies.
Do I get a hint?
What?
Am I eligible to answer it?
You're going to give a hint?
No, I said, am I eligible to answer it? Do I get a hint?
Yeah, no. You could actually, yeah, you could win if nobody calls by the end, or nobody emails by the end of the show. We'll give you the other copy.
Nice.
You're an honorary winner. The unclaimed copy.
I like winning things.
It's like a Blu-ray combo pack deal. And it's a pretty good movie. It's actually based on a true story, which I had no idea of the first time it was on TV and the commercials for being in the theater. It's a pretty intense movie. It's got, I haven't seen it yet, but from the way it sounds, it's got Clive Owen, Robert De Niro, and Jason Statham, the guy from all the Transporter movies. So, should be good. But anyway, we do have another couple UFC events coming up back-to-back here pretty soon. Definitely got to get to those. We got UFC on FX1 on the 20th, tomorrow. Right, today's the 19th. Tomorrow night, UFC on FX1. Melvin Guiard versus Miller, Jim Miller, is going to be the main event fight. Then we got Dwayne Ludwig versus Josh Neer, Jared Papazian versus Mike Easton, Christian Moorcraft fighting Pat Barry, Jorge Rivera versus Eric Schaefer, and Moorcraft we've actually had on the show before.
I remember interviewing Christian Moorcraft. I was talking to a couple of friends of mine that are big MMA fans, and whenever we do different interviews, I would tell them like, "Oh, who I interviewed and stuff like that." So that was one of the ones I remember.
And here's a fight matchup here. It's interesting. We have another former guest of ours, Kamal Shalrus versus Khabib Nurmagomedov. And Shalrus got tuned up pretty badly his first fight. I think it was against one of the Millers there. Not sure if it was Jim, but Shalrus got really beaten up bad. And I didn't think he was going to be back to the UFC, but now he's fighting this Khabib. Literally, his name is Khabib. On UFC on FX, probably in the preliminaries here. We also have Charlie Brenneman versus Daniel Roberts. Fabricio Camus versus Tom Hayden, Daniel Pineda versus Pat Schilling, and Nick Dennis versus Joseph Sandoval. But those are some solid free fights right there. Guiard versus Miller and Ludwig versus Neer for main events. Neer's been around everywhere fighting, a lot in the Iowa area there, the Midwest. I've seen him in a couple shows, actually. Ludwig, he's been all over the place. The WEC, in recent years, I think. Melvin Guiard just came off a tough knockout loss. He's fighting Jim Miller. That's going to be a good fight, either, no matter what happens. Then we have UFC on Fox 2, and that's going to be on the 28th of January. And the big event, main event there is Rashad Evans fighting Phil Davis. This fight was canceled because Davis had an injury. Rashad's been on and off of injuries. So now we get Rashad finally fighting Davis, and the winner will probably go on to fight Johnny Bones Jones for the light heavyweight title. And the co-main event now, it's been changed so many times. We got Chael Sonnen fighting Michael Bisping.
And no CM Punk.
No CM Punk. Just one Chael Sonnen Punk. CS Punk.
Yeah.
CM Punk. But, you know, Michael Bisping, we just saw him on the Ultimate Fighter show, and he's got a mouth, and a lot of people don't like him. And Chael Sonnen, obviously, is a guy who is always flapping his jaws about something, talking about how superior he is. Like the testosterone he takes is going directly to his head. But, so Michael Bisping moved his fight. He was supposed to fight Demian Maia, I believe, and now Demian Maia is fighting Chris Weidman in the third fight on the card there. Joey Beltran's fighting LaVar Johnson. Evan Dunham fighting Nick Lentz. Johnny Bedford versus Mitch Gagne. And these guys are, typically these guys ended up on the free shows are the guys that have gone through the Ultimate Fighter. So that's one of those guys that just went through, Johnny Bedford. Michael Johnson from the previous Ultimate Fighter, the winner of the show, fighting Shane Roller. Cub Swanson versus George Roop. Mike Russo versus John Olav Einemo. And Dustin Jacoby versus Chris Camozzi. And finally, Charles Oliveira versus Eric Wisely. It's kind of funny to see John Olav Einemo on there, because I thought he'd been cut too. Anyway. So that's UFC on FX 1 from Nashville, Tennessee tomorrow, and UFC on Fox 2 next weekend. And I know you're not going to be watching either one, are you, Tony?
Well, probably not.
Huh.
But you never know. You never know with me.
We're going to have a guest on a little bit named Victor Valimaki. They call him the Matrix. It's his nickname. He's 16-8 MMA guy from Edmonton, Alberta, Canada. He's a 205-pounder. And he's fighting February 11th, 2012 for Aggression MMA 9, fighting a guy named Jim Chamilli. February 11th. So we'll talk to him in a little while. Also, I had this card I found here on Saturday from the Roseland Ballroom in New York. Gabriel Bracero is fighting DeMarcus Corley. It's a light welterweight 10-rounder. It's a main event. Bracero is 18-0, 3 knockouts. DeMarcus is 37-19-1.
While you're looking at that, what is DeMarcus like record recently? That is the question. Like, because I know he's obviously well past his prime here, and you know, he's been losing more than he's been winning recently. I mean, we're talking about a guy that you know fought for titles. You know, he's fought guys like Miguel Cotto. He's fought guys like Floyd Mayweather. Mayweather stopped him, but, you know, he landed that one good shot on Mayweather and it buckled his knees a little bit, you know. Obviously not to the degree that Shane Mosley did, but it was noticeable. It was probably the first time that Floyd ever really got stunned in a fight.
Well, he lost 6 of his last fights, his last 6 fights. But they've only been to undefeated fighters or fighters with 1 loss only.
So basically what you're telling me there is he is now a stepping stone.
I guess so. You know, people, he's got a lot of losses against guys with only 1 loss. He's actually lost 8 of his last 9 fights. So that's winless in 2010 against Damian Fuller, who was 37-1. 30 wins, 7 losses, and 1 per all. And that was a technical knockout in the 4th round. 4th for Chop Chop. Marcus Chop Chop Corley.
Chop Chop Chop.
And his last one was December. He lost to Ruslan Provodnikov, who's 19-1. And he went all the way to Ekaterinburg, Russia, for that one. It was a unanimous decision. Surprise, surprise. It's not like he's going to get a decision in Russia against the Russian.
Yeah.
And, get this, it was for the vacant WBC Asian Boxing Council light welterweight title.
We're Asian Boxing Council.
Yep.
You never have one.
Well, they got them all.
Yeah.
So that's the main event. Then we have Alex Perez versus Josh Sosa on this New Year card. Perez is 14-0 with 8 knockouts. And Sosa lost it there for a second. Sosa is 10-1 with 5 knockouts and 70 home runs. Wrong guy. Also on that card is Luis Orlando Del Val, featherweights. It's going to be an 8-rounder between him and Jose Angel Baranza, who's 34-21-2, 26 knockouts. Del Val is a 14-0 with 11 knockouts. Ray Ash is also on this card. He's 25-1 with 18 knockouts, fighting Derek Bryant, 20-6, 1 draw, 17 knockouts.
I think Rand played a number of times down in Philadelphia. Very powerful guy. He's, you know, shorter in stature. Also, he's only 5'10", 5'11", probably about 215 pounds. Solid guy, hits hard, fights hard. He's chilling. But what I like about him most is they were talking about he would help train the Israeli commandos in hand-to-hand combat.
Yeah.
He's a badass, dude.
They're going to be busy in the
From Phantom, nice guy. You know, I never really got a chance to talk to him, but, you know, I've seen him interact with the other stuff fighters down there, and pretty much a really nice guy. Like me.
I believe it.
You believe I'm a nice guy, too?
Sometimes you can be.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I appreciate it.
Yeah. All right. Well, we also have who else we got on this card worth mentioning here? We got a female fight between Sonia Lamonicus and Carlotte Ewell. Lamonicus is 6-0 with a 1 knockout. Ewell is 15-7 with 9 knockouts. Boyd Melson, 7-0, is also on the card. He donates all of his money to stem cell research, I guess.
Oh, really?
That was science. He's a former West Point guy. Represented by Matty Yanofsky.
Oh,
dude. There's a blast in the past. Cliff Cruiser is fighting. Fighting Billy Zumbrin, heavyweights from Ogden, Utah.
Yeah, I remember Cliff Cowser when he was fighting. I'm trying to remember some of the guys that he was known for fighting. And he fought everybody. That's the thing. He fought so many guys. And I know Billy Zumbrin because he was one of the guys that fought Riddick Bowe while. And he took Riddick to a split decision. And I think it was Riddick won by 1 point from a knockdown he scored in like the fourth round. But Zumbrum hit Bo with some bombs. And that was like when guys are saying, man, Riddick really needs to stay retired. And that's really, even when we talked to Riddick a month or two ago, he really didn't sound all that great. And I'm like, he didn't sound good after the Galata fight. And that fight against Billy Zumbrum, he really didn't sound good afterwards. Speaking of Riddick Bowe, a friend of mine, remember a few months ago we interviewed that guy Eric, who does the pro wrestling writing?
Yeah.
guy that I'm mutual friends with in Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. He posted something on Facebook today. He posted an article. Riddick Bowe wants a fourth fight with Holyfield. I emailed him. I'm like, yeah, I knew about that 2 months ago. So we're trying to set it up. I said, they can't happen. They can't have it happen. Sandman's dead.
I still haven't tried to call Holyfield's number.
You got it. Oh, really?
I found him. But one of these days, I will. That'll be a good interview if it's him. It'll be an on-the-spot interview. Is this Evander Holyfield?
Yeah. Hey, do you have him here? Come talk to us.
Yeah. No, we're not punking you.
No, you're literally live on the air.
Yeah. Well, let's see what else we have on tap here. Well, the whole Amir Khan versus Lamont Peterson fight is getting stirred up into some more controversy. Trying to get the automatic rematch ruling overturned. He wants to appeal that. And they haven't actually had any talks about a rematch, surprisingly enough, even though I've been reading a lot of stuff that they're pretty much ready to go. Press it. Peterson is now trying to get it overruled. And the fight, basically, the controversy in the fight came from 2 points being taken from referee Joe Cooper, who took him from Amir Khan. And the judges ended up ruling in favor of Lamont Peterson. And unless he wins his appeal to the WBA, Peterson would have to fight a rematch with Khan or be stripped of that title. Peterson's trainer and manager, Barry Hunter, said, "We have an open mind and look forward to Lamont's first title defense. We will discuss internally and assess every viable opportunity available. We will then make the best decision possible for the future of Lamont and his family." And there's all kinds of hoopla surrounding some guy in a hat who supposedly sat up near the ring next to one of the judges and was around them. So they think he somehow altered the scores. Ridiculous. But also, Golden Boy and Amir Khan withdrew their protests with the IBF. So that was another part of the story. And apparently Khan is going to be trying to move up into the welterweight ranks. He's planning to make a move after the Peterson fight, unless he could talk unbeaten U.S. fighter Tim Bradley into a light welterweight showdown between the two. And, of course, last week was Muhammad Ali's birthday, 70th birthday.
70 years old. Yes, it is.
So he came out and waved to the crowds there. There was a whole lot of stuff on ESPN Classic this week, every night because of his birthday. It's continuing throughout this week, I believe. He's still doing it. It's probably something on right now. But don't watch it because you're listening to us. But there's also, plenty of good old school matches and stuff on there. But did you get to watch any boxing over the last weekend?
I watched some of the fights on Friday night. There really wasn't anything on Saturday that I remember. Long day place on Saturday, which kind of sucked for me. But no, really not much, you know, going on this weekend. It's Friday night fight. I'm looking forward very much to this weekend, you know, headed down to, you know, fight card. Because, you know, when you're working, you know, like I do, you know, you have a job where you really don't get a lot of enjoyment and a lot of stress is involved in it. Shouldn't be a lot of stress. It should be an easy job, but it's not. There's a lot of stress involved in it. You know, when you get to do things you really enjoy, I mean, it makes it that much more special. That way, going to the fight cards for me is very, very special to me. It's very enjoyable. I get to, you know, be around people that, you know, I'm happy being around. I get to see, you know, a bunch of old friends, some old training partners. You know, we swap stories and bullshit, which is, you know, pretty cool. And then, you know, I get to write the article, which is a lot of fun. I've been working out a lot lately. This is the best I've felt in years. What I've been doing is, you know, I'm splitting it up. I'm doing, you know, 5 days a week, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Saturday. Wednesday, I do strictly boxing, shadow boxing, some skipping rope, heavy bag work, where I'm doing like about six or so rounds. You know, I'm building up the endurance, I'm building up the stamina and all that. So, feeling pretty good. On Tuesdays and Thursdays, I've been doing some cardio and some shadow boxing and some weights. I really haven't done weights steadily since I got out of high school, which feels like it was about 800 years ago. I use one of those Nordic Flex machines where you use your own body resistance on there. And I'm doing, you know, like almost like the pull downs and the press outs and the leg lifts and all that. And it feels good. It feels really good. What, do we got a caller?
No.
Okay. But no, it feels good to be doing all that again. And then on Saturday, I go back to the boxing. I usually take Friday nights off to kind of relax, you know, go out to dinner or whatever. And then I do the boxing again on Saturday, which is what I'll do this weekend. You know, get up Saturday morning, maybe take my dog out for a walk if he's being good, which I highly doubt, but maybe I'll take him anyway. Putz around a little bit, and then it's sick. We'll probably want to get down there and grab a bite to eat beforehand, so we'll probably leave the house at like 4:30. So I'll probably want to work out no later than 2. That'll get me done by 3:30. Then I can grab a shower and, you know, be good to go. Make sure I have all my paperwork. But it's good. It's good to work out again. I had my two students come back last week, Jeff and Alex. First time they've come back since Hurricane Irene. So they need to get me a little feet wet a little bit and get back to the groove again. Both did a good job. We weren't able to do it this week. Actually, I was stuck late at work yesterday, which really pissed me off because we had one of our outside employees there. I really don't like the guy. He's an arrogant dipshit. And he called me into a meeting at 4:55.
Hi.
Even though it was only 10 minutes, it was just enough to make me catch traffic. So I'm driving home pissed off, and I got a text message from my one student saying he was sick and he wasn't going to be able to make it. So I canceled the session and was able just to get home, cool off, and then work out on my own. But it's nice when you are able to.
Oh, I'm losing. You there, Tony? Can you hear me? Technical difficulties. Thank you. All right. Sorry about that disconnect. The technical difficulties got the better of us there, but it should be smooth.
It's okay.
The rest of this book should be fine.
They won the battle, but they always lose the war.
Exactly. We always come back. Anyway, as I was talking about earlier, the ESPN folks did this little report, and then I wanted to play. It's about 10 minutes long, and we got a little bit of time before we get our next guest on, so I wanted to play this and give you an idea of what it's all about.
Days for Lorenzo Fertitta, the man who runs the Ultimate Fighting Championship.
We have a better product, we put up our money, and we were smarter than everybody else.
Fertitta and his brother Frank, both heirs to the station casino fortune, are each worth more than $1 billion, according to Forbes magazine. While the UFC's outspoken president Dana White often grabs headlines, most credit CEO Lorenzo Fertitta's business acumen for the company's remarkable growth. The Fertittas bought the UFC in 2001 for $2 million. Today, according to industry insiders, the company is worth well over $1 billion.
I don't know what the UFC is worth. Do I think it's valuable? I think it's the most valuable sports franchise on the planet.
But with greater size comes greater scrutiny. UFC's $34 million acquisition of rival Strikeforce in March prompted an investigation by the Federal Trade Commission. Many within the sport are now convinced the company is well on its way to becoming a monopoly, able to exert even greater control over fighter wages. At the lowest levels, the UFC pays its fighters just a few $1,000 per fight.
We are giving these guys tremendous opportunities to be able to make more money, have bigger exposure, get bigger sponsors. It is actually a great thing. And when you throw the term monopoly, it's the most ridiculous thing that anybody could ever say. There's nowhere for fighters to go in order to make that kind of money. Nowhere. There's nowhere for them to go to make a living. UFC's it.
UFC Hall of Famer Ken Shamrock fought in the first ever UFC event in 1993. And is perhaps best known for his clashes with fellow star Tito Ortiz. Today, Shamrock spends much of his time training his son.
There you go.
Who hope to launch their own careers in the sport, but is mindful of the limited options for fighters today.
UFC has gone out and strategically bought out every company, or they cut the knees out from underneath them when they tried to get started by putting on shows while their shows were on. Which is fine. There's nothing wrong with that kind of business. But when you get in that position, then don't use that kind of position to hold the fighters hostage.
To extend to these multiple acquisitions of competitors, impact the leverage a fighter has.
Listen, Steve, there is a number of outlets for these guys. You just mentioned.
Comparable outlets? There never has been a comparable outlet. There never has been.
If I've got a top guy, I either take what the UFC gives me or I'm out of business.
Iowa-based promoter Monty Cox has managed the careers of 7 UFC champions. He currently manages 70 fighters, 16 of whom are currently under contract with the UFC.
The UFC has all the good fighters. Their weight classes are super deep with talent, so they don't have to pay. They only pay the guys who can fight through the gauntlet and get to the top. Those guys get paid. The rest of them, they don't have to pay a lot of money for.
Outside the Lines has spoken with more than 20 current, former, and potential UFC fighters, as well as agents and promoters. To a person, they say UFC fighters have not received their fair share of the company's rapidly increasing revenue. Nearly all of them also refuse to keep on camera or play the UFC with blackball. One person told us if he spoke out, quote, it would mean the end of my career.
The fighters know it clear as day. There is no second guessing. If they say anything negative or even try to negotiate a better deal, they're done.
You're the guy who runs this company. Why is it that guys can't even talk about the subject?
Anybody can talk about anything. We've had plenty of situations where fighters have come out and made statements. If a guy is somebody that the fans want to pay for, I don't care what he does or what he says, I want him on our payroll. I want him fighting for us. I could care less. There's no retribution.
Fertitta says 29 fighters on the current roster receive a cut of pay-per-view money, the lifeblood of the UFC. That can push paydays for top draws like welterweight champion George St. Pierre into the millions per fight.
Since 2005 to today, once we started actually generating enough revenue so we're not losing money, we've paid out over $250 million to our fighters. We've made 39 millionaires since we've owned the company.
But then there's the entry-level fighters. Under the UFC's performance-based pay model, incoming fighters make $6,000 just to show up for their first fight, and then another $6,000 if they win, for a total of $12,000. Fighters are then put on a graduating scale. They would have to win their first three fights, roughly the number they fight in a year, to clear $48,000. That's far in excess of the paydays for many boxers who, at the lowest levels, fight for hundreds of dollars a night. But it pales in comparison to the average league minimums of the four major sports, which range from a low of $320,000 for incoming NFL players to a $500,000 for incoming NHL players. The athletes in the four major sports make roughly 50% of the revenues from their respective leagues. In the NFL, for example, the 2011 season was in jeopardy over a labor dispute, and the players, before the lockout, already made more than half of the revenue pie. So how does that compare to the UFC? Multiple sources told Outside the Line the UFC pays fighters roughly 10% of the revenue. How accurate is that assessment?
Completely inaccurate.
Would you put a percentage on it for us?
I would tell you that, you know, looking at the numbers, it's not far off from what the other major sports leagues pay as a percentage of revenue.
Are you saying that you pay fighters as a percentage of revenues in the neighborhood of 50%?
In that neighborhood, yeah. In that neighborhood.
The actual percentage of revenues the UFC pays its fighters is not public knowledge. The UFC's pay scale is also based on a system of bonuses that are handed out at the discretion of Lorenzo Fertitta and Dana White.
It's going to be a big night. I'm going to give $65,000 to the guy who gets the knockout of the night. On top of that, I'm going to give $20,000 to every guy that pulls off a knockout tomorrow. You f***ers are going to make a lot of money tomorrow.
At each event, fighters have the potential to get rewarded for having either the fight of the night, submission of the night, or knockout of the night. Fighters we talk to, they love getting the money.
I'm sure they do.
But a number of them talked about the bonus structure as a method of control. And one of them even said to us, you know, the following. He said, they keep you guessing, so you can't really complain. You just have to, his words, kiss their ass to make sure you get one, meaning a bonus.
Is it kiss their ass or do you have to perform like any other company in America? You have to perform, you know, to be able to get compensated.
But the precise amount of the bonuses, like the UFC's total revenues, are not public. The UFC isn't required to report bonuses to state athletic commissions, and as a private company, doesn't have to tell anyone, not even its own fighters, how much money it makes. That's in stark contrast to the sport of boxing, where the format requires disclosures to the boxer that include amounts of any compensation that a promoter has contracted to receive.
If we knew exactly what the UFC was making, it would give us ammunition to go in and fight for more.
For years, there have been rumblings about the formation of a fighters' union within the UFC, something that would arguably give the men who step into the octagon much-needed bargaining power. Fertitta insists he's neutral on the issue, and he appears equally unfazed, at least outwardly, about the ongoing Federal Trade Commission investigation of the UFC's recent strike force deal.
I'm proud of what we've done. I think what we've done is exactly what America is all about. It's we go out, we risk our money, we use our entrepreneurial spirit, we work 14 hours a day, we create an industry that these guys wouldn't be making any money if it wasn't for us. And 39 millionaires, I'm pretty proud of that. And we're going to make a lot more because we're just getting started.
So there you go. That's their little report over on ESPN that got Dana White and Lorena really pissed off. They actually released a full video of that interview. It's like a 48-minute interview. And so they immediately responded to it with a sick interview. Dana White obviously put out his own little rant. I'll play a little bit of it here.
So I'm still there in Brazil. I've been anticipating this ESPN piece to come out, and it was a piece of trash, one-sided, you know, typical stuff that anyone would be. I don't know, I get a little fired up about this stuff. I need to calm down, but people don't realize, you know, ESPN doesn't care about the sport. ESPN hates this sport. They won't even cover it. They don't cover the sport. They don't do the great stories about this brand, even about the sport that should be done. They don't tell stories about the fighters. You know, do you ever see any in-depth great story about, you know, UFC fighters on ESPN? Hell no, you don't. You see this garbage outside the lines BS. You're going to see, first of all, this first one that we put together is you know, we showed you how we can put some of our stuff inside there, talk to some of the fighters, and take it for what you want. Then we'll show you the interview, raw, uncut, and it's, you know, the entire interview. And you will see on some of the things, especially when you watch their version of the interview. You know, you do a 40-minute interview with a guy, and then you do a, you know, 9-minute piece with him, and they make it look like all this bad stuff's going on, and you know, they don't tell Lorenzo's side of the story when Lorenzo says things. You'll see this thing in its entirety, and you'll see ESPN, Outside Lines, E60, and these shows like this, how they do business and what they're like. They're dirty. They're dirty, that they lie, and they never really give you all the facts. That's why you can't even watch stuff like this on TV. And from now, that's why I did not participate in this interview. I refuse to participate in the interview, and I will never participate in any more interviews like that. And if I do, this is the only one way that will be done, where we film them filming us. Thanks, guys.
Our story, as you well know, is about the issue of UFC fighter pay.
That's what Dana had to say. Of course, cool. They'd be defensive.
Well, does that surprise you?
No, not at all. Basically, I mean, they did pick a lot of guys that had some bones to pick with the UFC. The actual written report talks about a lot of different fighters who came out of the woodwork and wouldn't reveal their names, so anonymous sources, you know, but people obviously who would be fearing that they would get repercussions if they spoke up. And, you know, we've interviewed quite a few UFC guys who talk about that, you know, the veiled threats of, you know, if you talk against the management, you could be out on your ass. And, you know, we've seen it happen with some shit like with the video game likeness rights, where John Fitch got thrown out for a day because he wouldn't sign over his lifetime likeness rights to this one video game that the UFC wanted to do. And he had to do it just to get back in. It's ridiculous. But anyway, they're making money hand over fist, and Lorenzo says it's 50% of the revenue that's going to the fighters or in that neighborhood. He also mentions in the written portion, there's mention that he says there's 500 employees that they have to pay in the UFC, which is surprising because that's the first time we've heard of him. Usually it's Dana White or the Fertittas, you know, or the matchmaker maybe. We don't hear about the other employees all that much. So it's nice that they finally mentioned them. But it's pretty intense. But anyway, so the whole purpose of the piece was to highlight the idea of you know, these younger guys coming up need to make more money. And we had a guy on not too long ago, Chuck Cold Steel O'Neil from The Ultimate Fighter. And he talked about the brutal schedule of that show, where, you know, those fights don't count for a reason, because they're fighting, you know, one week after another. And, yeah, how do you put that kind of experience on your record? But if they're real fights. and they have to go through that crap when they don't necessarily have, you know, full-fledged health insurance. They just have training insurance, basically. So, and you have to make it, you know, onto the USC roster to get any good treatment, and you're an independent contractor when you get there. So, you know, they like to compare themselves to, you know, wanting to be like the NFL and everything, but you got to organize your system a little bit better and straighten out your pay scale. Because I've said that even the bonuses is a great thing, but, you know, some people get them when other people deserve them. And, you know, how do you get a bonus for one thing and another guy doesn't get one for another great fight? It's just ridiculous.
And it always reminds me of one thing in college boxing. For a lot of the invitationals they would have, they would always have a fighter of the night. And 90-some percent of the shows, now obviously it's not a monetary reward, but 90% of the time, the fighter of the night or the boxer of the night was somebody from the host school. Imagine this. Okay, you're fighting at my alma mater. Okay? Which I will not mention right now. And we're having our annual show, and there's six fighters from that school on the show. And then there's other schools like Penn State, Army, Navy, Mansfield, whoever, VMI. And, you know, it's all whatever. Now, I fight in the eighth fight of the night, and I have a good fight. And, you know, I beat Michael Jordan, or I beat Rick D'Artone or whatever from Shippensburg. And then there were some other fighters, and you had a kid from Navy who had a great fight. And he may have, my senior year, I beat Michael Jordan. And comes the fact that he ended up being a national silver medalist that year. We didn't know that at the time. He wasn't a, it was his first time off post. Now, maybe if it was the following year and he was, you know, the national silver medalist and I beat him in the fashion that I did, I might have gotten more consideration for Fighter of the Night, which I would have loved. I would have loved to have gotten that trophy. But for the most part, it's like, okay, well, this fight's at Penn State. I don't recall being at any show at Penn State a Penn State fighter not getting Fighter of the Night. You know, I could have went there and, you know, beat so-and-so very impressively, but mostly the officials are going to name it to a Penn State fighter because then that leaves the crowd happy, you know?
Right.
And I almost gave away my alma mater on there.
And I haven't checked if we got any emails yet. But again, folks, if you can guess where Tony and I went to school and boxed, then you get a copy of the Zulu Pack Killer Elite, an action thriller with Robert De Niro, Clive Owen, and Jason Statham. And I can't wait to get it. I'm going to watch this. It comes with a digital copy too, believe it or not. You get a DVD, Blu-ray, and a digital copy. But anyway, let me get our guest on here a couple minutes early. We're going to get Victor Valamaki. Oops, we lose Tony? We lost Tony. Gonna get Victor. Oh, two.
Hey, how's it going?
Hi, this is Rebel Rouser, Rich Person, No Fake News Unlimited. How's it going?
Hey, how you doing? I can barely hear right now.
Is that any better?
Yeah, that's a lot better, thanks.
All right. So, Vic, you got a fight coming up here with Aggression MMA. Tell us a little bit about your opponent. Do you know anything about him?
Yeah, absolutely. I know quite a bit about him. You know, he's been fighting around the same circles as me for a little while now. You know, he's fought one of my training partners, Nick Benner, and you know, I've just been watching him for a while. You know, I try to keep an eye on most guys in my elite division locally.
And you just recently signed on with these guys. What do you know about Aggression MMA there?
I've actually known the promoters of Aggression for quite a while now. I was actually originally supposed to fight for them last year before I got injured. I blew my shoulder out, which is one of the reasons I was out for over a year from fighting. So I've actually known them for quite a while. And it's a great event. I mean, it's definitely up and coming. This event will sell out. I'm pretty sure it's close to selling out as it is right now. And, you know, they're taking over in Western Canada right now, that's for sure.
And what is it like with the Canadian scene? Is it all legal all across Canada yet, or are there still some areas where it's not legal?
It seems it is, and you know, they crack down on the ones that are illegal. I haven't heard of any illegal ones in the last little while. So, you know, it's as the sport's getting more accepted. I mean, the governments are, like the commissions are going ahead and actually sanctioning MMA and not just boxing anymore. So. You know, it seems like the sport's growing in everywhere down the States, here, everywhere.
Cool. You were talking about the injury that kept you out for a while. Did I hear you correctly? Did you say it was a shoulder injury?
Yeah, I was wrestling and dislocated my shoulder, and things just tore the hell out of it, and I've been doing rehab and stuff for it, and physio for it, it's for rehab. You know, it's good. It's definitely not 100%, but it's one of those things. Knees and shoulders take a lifetime to get better. But it's definitely coming out. Feel strong. I'm going to be ready for this fight, that's for sure.
Yeah, I had injured shoulder in a boxing match years ago. Popped it out of the socket in the first round of a sparring session, and I hit it for three rounds and did a lot of damage to it. So I know where you're coming from and the rehab and riding a little hand bike and whatever it was and all that, you know, crap that I had to do for 6 months. So I know how sensitive shoulder is, but once you get them built back up in strength, I know how, you know, strong, much stronger it can become, like mine.
I mean, they were on the fence about surgery with it. They basically left it up to me. They said, you can get it done, and then you have to, I'll be out a year, year and a half, you know, like doing a full, you know, rehab after surgery, or I can just try to rehab it on my own. And it's been a little slow going, but it's definitely coming along now.
Yeah, I'm still recovering from a broken ankle. That's a rough one.
No, that's never fun. I've done that before as well, and it's not a lot of fun either.
This is my second one. I went to the hospital for the first one, though, and that healed pretty properly. This other one, not so much. I didn't go to the hospital for it. It was broken. I just kind of wrapped it up. Probably needs to be reset. I don't know.
Yeah.
We'll see. I'm still walking on it. Still working on it.
Yeah, that's all right. Yeah, I've injured mine so many times. I can roll my ankle just walking around right now. So usually tape it up pretty good nowadays.
Yeah. Now, what do you enjoy most about mixed martial arts?
I think the competitiveness of it. I was never great at team sports. I mean, I'm a fairly athletic guy, and, you know, I took them up fine, but I didn't have that passion for the team sports where you could, you know, you could have the best game of your life and the team could still lose because somebody's not carrying their weight. With MMA, it's, you know, it's you and one other guy in there. I mean, obviously you have your teammates behind you, helping you, training you, cornering you. But, you know, ultimately it's you in there, and if you win, it's on you, and then if you lose, it's also on you. So I think just that individuality of it and the competitiveness and just the training and the lifestyle behind it, I really enjoy.
And how did you first get involved in sport itself?
You know, I think I got into it the kind of way most people got into it, you know, watching those early UFCs and watching the martial arts and being, oh, my God, I want to do this. And, started jiu-jitsu when I was 15 and just kind of kept going with it. And I started winning a lot of grappling tournaments, and I had a promoter. It was actually Mark Pavlich, who runs the MFC. He contacted me about fighting and said, sure, why not? Let's try it out. And, you know, I couldn't punch myself over the wet paper bag at the beginning, but it's, you know, it's definitely coming along now.
Yeah, a little bit of time on the grand stage there at the UFC. What was that experience like?
To be completely honest, I wasn't ready at the time for it. I'm not going to turn it down. If UFC calls you, you know, you go. But I probably needed another year or so after that to get properly ready, more mentally than anything. My first UFC fight I felt great in, and it was good. I went to a split decision. But the second one, I definitely got overwhelmed. I was not mentally prepared for it. When I went out there, it was in Manchester, England for UFC 70, and it was, you know, obviously 20,000 people in the crowd, and, you know, it's pretty overwhelming. I think I was 23 or 24 at the time, and it was just definitely not ready. Obviously, it was a lot of fun going there and seeing how grand everything is with the UFC. I mean, everything they do is huge. But I definitely want another shot at it.
Yeah, definitely. It's changed quite a bit since then.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Obviously, it's harder to get in now as well. I mean, there's so much more competition with the sport being bigger that it's, you know, it's a lot harder to get in, and you have to have that more name recognition just to even get in now, and a good winning streak and all that. So I'm just hoping I want to, you know, on a winning streak. It was nice actually having a break here. I recharged the batteries, and I feel good. So, you know, I hope I go on a good streak here and, you know, get the call.
Now, what's the most important thing that you do to get ready for a fight?
I think the biggest thing is mental training. I think that's in any sport, though. You know, obviously the physical there, but I've gotten into fights in great physical shape, but my head wasn't into the fight, and obviously I didn't do that well. And I've gotten into fights where I was sick or whatnot and couldn't train to the level I needed to, but I was focused and my head was into it, so it came out ahead. And I do a lot of mental training. I was seeing a sports psychologist the last while here to really, you know, get focused and just working that mental game. I read a lot of psychology books, things like that. And I think for myself, I think for a lot of athletes, that's the biggest aspect is just being mentally there. I mean, too many guys go into the fight not ready or not mentally ready and they don't look that great.
So do you use psychological warfare in the cage? Do you talk smack to your opponents?
I never do, actually. I never do. I see it more as a sport. And I mean, I have a lot of guys talk it to me, but I generally don't. I mean, you might say the odd thing here and there, but I don't really smack talk. And I don't see it really as psychological war once I'm in there. I just go try to do my thing and go fight. But I think the lead up to it is a little more psychological.
And I come from the same line that you do. When I first started boxing a lot of years ago, I was, you know, I growing up in Philadelphia, you know, obviously, you know, you get used to watching all the Rocky movies and everything, and they were based so much like every fight was a war, and it was every these guys, you know, was a deep-seated rivalry. So I'm getting into boxing now, and I was watching, like, Mike Tyson fight at the time. He was really popular. So I would get used to the big-time stare-downs, and these guys, I'm going to get you, I'm going to kick your ass, and this and that. So I think, okay, I got to be real serious, and I take everything real serious. You know, you can't even, like, joke with your opponent until after it's over. And my freshman year, you know, I was 1-3. I fought in the regionals, but I just wasn't enjoying what I was doing. And like, I loved the sport, but I wasn't enjoying it. I just texted the guy a minute or two ago. So I'm going to see him on Saturday night. It was the guy that I trained with in Philadelphia. And we were sparring one night, and I didn't want to spar with him because he would always talk trash, but it wasn't like a mean talk trash, like you're terrible or you're no good or I'm going to kill you or something like that. It was more like joking around, like, I'm Apollo Creed. Come on, let's go. I'm going to get you. And I'm like, he's going to make me look stupid in this ring. And even though I was bigger than he was, and he was talking trash to me in a funny, joking way, and I started talking trash to him, joking back with him, and he told me, that's what it's all about. I was having fun with you to make you come out of your shell and to learn
what you're doing, you got to enjoy it. Have fun out there. So I was like, and that's how I kind of trained. And, you know, I got along with most of the guys I trained with, and I got along even with a lot of guys that I fought. And I remember going to a show at the Naval Academy one time. I was fighting a guy from Penn State. And they got there before we did, and they were all in the one dressing room, and they were all laying down, resting. And I walked in there, and I looked at them, and I knew all the guys. I got along with most of them. I said, oh, I see you guys are practicing for tonight, laying down flat. That's how you're all going to end up when you fight me. And we all had a laugh. That it wasn't like a malicious thing. And what'd you say? You ain't going to do nothing? No, we laughed hysterically. Then I went out. I fought the guy. I won that fight, decision. But it was like a smack talk, but it wasn't a malicious, like, hater smack talk.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I'm the same way, trying to, you know, joke around. Half the guys I've fought, I'm actually good friends with and trained with, and, you know, now and then. I mean, it's a small community, so it doesn't do a lot of good burning bridges and you know, having everyone gunning for you because you're an asshole. But, Yeah, I'm pretty much the same way. I'll joke around, and, like, I have trouble even, like, keeping a serious face when I stare down with the guys. So, I mean, for me, it is just a sport, and, yeah, I mean, I love it. I have a passion. I definitely get focused behind it, and I get that aggression, but, I mean, I don't have it towards him necessarily. It's just more I want to go win, and, you know, I try to joke around with him. And after that, I thought, I mean, even this opponent that I'm fighting here, Tim Cinelli, we've hung out and we've had drinks together before, and, you know, so there's no animosity. It's just obviously you want to both go in. So it's life's too short for me to go in and start smack talking guys, I think. It doesn't suit me that well.
I got to ask you, how'd you get your nickname, The Matrix?
I've been trying to get rid of that Matrix nickname for years, and people keep bringing it back. So if you want a new one, just feel free to throw it at me. Mark Kravitz, who runs MSC, you see my manager, and I got this nickname. I was sparring with Jason McDonald one day, and he was on his back, and he threw an up kick, and I kind of did that back arch thing that Keanu Reeves does, where you kind of fall back and dodge the bullets, and these kids were watching the thing, and said, oh, man, you look like you're in the Matrix there, and then he just pegged it on me right there, and it's stuck ever since, and it's a nickname I'm trying to get rid of, but it's every time I do it, I think I have someone else going. People keep bringing it back up.
So what's the candidate for the new nickname? Do you got any yet?
I have no. You can't come up with your own nickname, so I don't know. People keep going with that one, so I don't know.
Well, you know, you can always go with Vicious Victor, but that's kind of old.
Yeah. Yeah, well, the finisher was one because I'm a Finnish background, so, and they said I was winning all my fights by finishing guys, like 8 in a row, so I had they kept begging me with that one, too, so I don't mind that one as much. It's a little better than the Matrix.
Right. You got to stick with what's marketable, I guess.
Yeah, I guess.
Now, do you have any favorite submission moves or punches or styles of fighting that you kind of lean on?
Not really favorite. I've really worked on rounding out my game. I mean, I used to be pretty much a straight ground guy, and I started boxing. I'm 2-0 in pro boxing as well now. So, like, I can go stand up or ground. I'm comfortable in both. I mean, probably my best submissions, like a rear naked choke. I have a few wins by that. And standing up, I got a pretty nasty left hook. So, you know, those are probably my two favorite, I'd say.
Well, our co-host here, Tony, call him Tony the Tornado. He's our boxing rain man, we also call him.
We always joke that I know way too many stats and even old-time stuff about the sport of boxing. I'm actually going to a fight card on Saturday night in Philadelphia. It's going to be aired. It was on what used to be the Versus channel on Comcast or whatever it is. And now it's an NBC channel, which is pretty cool. They're having a live fight card down there at a place in South Philly. I'm going to head down to that. I know that the one guy that I just messaged a minute or so ago, he just emailed me back. and you know, said, you know, we're gonna meet up down there and, you know, talk some old stories and stuff. But I'm gonna get down there, check out some fights, cover it for the website. And like I said, I used to train down in Philly for years. We put guys in my gym in world title fights. And the coolest guy, I didn't get to meet him, but he spent 2 days at my gym back in 1995, was Mike Tyson. He was coming to fight in Philly about a couple months after he got out of prison. And he was coming in on the week before the fight, and he snuck in a week early and was hitting all the different gyms. And the gym that, you know, he hit for 2 days was my gym. He had it secluded that, you know, he was doing it when the rec center was closed to get a, you know, private training. And I always joke with my dad. My dad hung all the bags in that gym. I'm like, Dad, your joist was the one that held Mike Tyson's 200-pound heavy bag. He's like, yeah, if I didn't put the joist up there, that bag would have collapsed. They needed me to do it. But, yeah, so that was cool. We've got other guys there that have stopped by. Burt Cooper, who had fought for a world title against Amanda Holyfield. And you get to meet some of these guys. And these guys you see on TV, especially me at the time, I was 18 years old. And I was like, wow, man, I remember watching these guys growing up as a kid, and I'm training with them now. I'm like, how cool is this? So, yeah, I'm definitely a boxing guy, and I'm a hook guy, too. I mean, from Philadelphia, you know, you learn watching Joe Frazier all them years. You didn't have a choice.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. I'm a huge fan of boxing as well. That's why I got, you know, not just to supplement the MMA, but kind of wanted to take some boxing fights, and I love the sport as well. It's kind of, I hope the state of it actually picks up. I mean, there's not any of those marquee fights anymore other than, you know, Mayweather or Pacquiao that they're talking about, but there's not the same kind of sparkle around boxing that they used to do. So I'm kind of hoping that it picks up a little bit.
They're televising a lot more of it lately, you know, show Tony's going to, that's a new show. Spike TV, actually, they're going to pick off where they left off at the UFC. They're going to do more boxing with Bob Arum and Tom Brank.
Oh, that'd be great.
So it's kind of growing, whereas a lot of people are saying it's dead. But, yeah, there's definitely a need for more top-level matches.
I think it's far from dead. I mean, the sport's been around so long, too, and every sport has its ups and downs, and I mean, I'm sure it won't be long before it's right back up there anyway, so there is still some big fights, obviously, so I'm hoping it picks up.
Yeah, we were just talking about the whole big ESPN story. I don't know if you heard anything about it, but it was about fighter pay in the UFC for the entry-level guys being so low. Now, as a guy who's done both boxing and MMA, what do you think about the pay scale differences between boxing and MMA?
I'm sure like you've heard everything I have about the change room bonuses and things like that. And they absolutely do that. They did give me a bonus as well. And I think the initial pay could definitely be a lot more. And I think the athletes, especially when guys are devoting their whole life and to sport, and let's say you sign with the UFC and you get to fight twice a year. You know, if you're making $5,000 or something per fight, I mean, it's definitely not enough to live on, even with sponsors and stuff. I mean, it can definitely add up. But I think the entry level needs to pay more. I mean, obviously the top guys like St. Pierre and them are making, you know, quite a bit of money. But the entry level definitely needs to pick up, I think. But, I mean, as the sport grows, that's going to pick up as well.
Yeah, we actually, before it even got to be a real popular debate, we used to try to get good guests to talk back and forth on both sides about, you know, into the best of boxing and the best of MMA. And one of the things I kept coming up with was, it's still a little bit true, is that a lot of mixed martial artists just don't have good boxing skills.
Well, absolutely. I mean, that's why I went and actually started taking straight boxing. And like the guys at St. Pierre are now too, I mean, with Freddie Roach. And obviously you have to modify it slightly for MMA just to, you know, to fight takedowns and things like that. But I mean, you get like a mediocre boxer. I mean, you get somebody who's ever done a Golden Gloves or anything, and put him in just stand up. Obviously, no takedowns against the MMA guy, and typically the boxer is going to chew him to pieces. So I know just a little, like the little things I notice are the footwork and angles that the boxers use that MMA guys typically don't. I mean, the higher end guys like Anderson Silva definitely do. I mean, it's definitely picking up now, though, especially at like the UFC level. I mean, guys are really picking up the stand up now, but it's definitely a different level.
Yeah, it seems to me too. Like the sport has adapted because of fans at the beginning when it went to the ground. It's kind of adapted more to a striking game, and I think that's the number one area of improvement the fighters go for, because it's not only gets the fans involved, but it gets them their bonuses. You get a knockout of the night bonus potential for fighting that way, and you get fight of the night bonus for fighting that way.
Yeah, and people obviously want to watch those exciting fights and typically pay more. That's why you have a guy like Chuck Liddell. You know, he was the highest paid guy in the UFC for a long time because he knocked everyone out, and he rarely hit the ground. So, people want to see those knockouts and those big, striking battles.
Now, what do you do outside the ring, the cage, training and all that?
I do a couple of things. I went to school for personal training. I do that still part-time. I only train a few athletes, and I'm just more for kicks. But I actually manage a nightclub here in Edmonton. So, I do that, on the side and pay the bills. And it allows me to train during the day.
I assume you don't partake too much in the alcoholic beverages you serve at the club?
Not anymore. That's honestly one of the reasons, I didn't do so well. I was on a losing streak there. I wasn't taking anything seriously. I was out drinking and partying too much. And it was really a downfall of my career there for a year. I mean, it obviously showed in the ring. And that's one of the big things. I mean, I pretty much completely quit drinking now, and just focused. And it's a measurable difference now with how it was compared to before. So absolutely now I don't. I'm just focusing and training. But before, I found out being an athlete and being an alcoholic doesn't work. So it don't really combine too well.
The drunken master approach doesn't work either, right?
No, I tried that for a while, and it obviously didn't work.
Well, more power to you there for getting that out of the way. I did all my drinking in college, so I never really had a problem with it after that.
You could have been for a couple of years.
So as far as role models growing up, was there anybody inside or outside the sport that really helped you a lot and kept you interested in it?
Not necessarily related directly to MMA, but Arnold Schwarzenegger was a big motivation growing up. I mean, obviously his movies, but just like the athlete that he was and the mental strength that he had going in, winning all the Mr. Olympias, and even to this day, I'll still throw in Pumping Iron. If I'm feeling unmotivated, I'll throw in Pumping Iron and watch that, and you'll want to go to the gym right away. So I think Arnold Schwarzenegger was a really big one growing up for me. And then I was a big fan of Randy Couture, in the earlier UFC, around the time he started. And I ended up actually training with him a couple of times and a couple of training trips down to train with him. So, I mean, those were the two guys that really, even to this day, Randy Couture is still a pretty big role model. I mean, he's obviously got his life together, so.
Yeah, he was one of the first people to really speak out and against the UFC there for a little while, too, before he came back and retired with them. But, I got a chance to interview his son, Ryan, at the gym a few months ago when I was out there in Vegas, and I also met Randy face-to-face one time out there. And he's so personable, looks like an everyday guy.
Yeah. He's the kind of guy you could actually sit down and just have a beer with or something, and he's just that guy. He's a pretty great guy, actually.
Yeah, a lot of big names trained at that gym. There was actually a grappling tournament going on there when I saw him there. So he takes it pretty seriously. He takes care of his guys, and he definitely feeds the sport with everything that he does.
Absolutely. Yeah, I've been down there, and actually for my next fight, I'll be taking a trip down there probably to do some training. I used to go to Vegas quite a bit. Before Sean Tompkins passed, I used to train with him at Tapo a little bit, and this my next training trip will most likely be to Extreme Couture.
There's a nickname for you. You just go move to Vegas. You'll be Vegas Victor.
I don't know if that's a nickname you want in fighting. Sounds like someone else.
I lived out there for a few months. It's kind of weird, It doesn't really ever get all that cold. Being from New England, when you're out there, it's like you never see snow. And it's just weird. And it's only goes down to about 40 degrees max. For a low temperature, the pump is there all year round. And being from Canada, you probably feel the same way that I felt.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and it was a little weird going to Vegas. I was going to there to train. I was down there for 3 weeks at one point, and when you're not out and partying and going to the casino and doing a lot of Vegas, is definitely a different city.
Yeah, the Strip is such a small part of it too. There's just like a huge neighborhood around Vegas that people don't even see most of because they just go out there for the Strip. But there's a hell of a lot going on. All right.
Yeah.
So, is there anybody out there in the league that you really want to fight, or anybody that you're thinking hoping to get in a rematch with down the line, or anything like that?
Yeah, Martin Daisley is a big one. He's from Montreal. He's I had a loss to him here when I was having a low spot in my career. I fought him, and just the way he carries himself, I'd love to have a rematch. He's about the only guy in the sport I have any real animosities towards, and he's a guy I'd love to fight again. So I don't know if it'll happen, but I want to work my way towards that. And really, to avenge any loss, I'd love to go do. But he's one that really sticks out to me that I'd love to fight again.
Well, go punch him in the head, and you'll No, don't do that.
No, the outside the ring that doesn't go over too long, man.
Just put a sign on its front lawn or something.
Yeah.
Call this number if you want to fight me. What else is going on at this big event coming up? It's in February, right? Your next fight there?
Yes, February 11th. We have Ryan Ford on the card as well, with co-main event. And Tyson Steele, I believe it's from Winnipeg. And that should be a good fight. I think the UFC is actually looking at Tyson right now. He's 8-1, I believe. If he beats Ryan, I've heard he's going to get the call, but I mean, that's obviously not always that reliable. But then Ryan Ford, I know Ryan for years, and he always trains hard, and he's in great shape. I just saw him the other day, and he's looking really good. And, Roy McDonald, I know, had a lot of high praise for him. So, it's going to be an exciting fight, I think, either way. So, I don't know Tyson personally. I'm pulling for Ryan, but, it's going to be exciting anyways. And a lot of up-and-coming guys, Sheldon Westcott, I believe, is on the card, and I haven't heard what happened. I know he made the final cut for the Ultimate Fighter show. I don't know if he's actually going to be on it or what the deal is, but he's a super athlete from here, and it's a great card overall.
Now, what do you think about the growth of the sport with the UFC being so big now? From the time that you started till now, obviously there's a lot happening with them in the smaller leagues and regulation everywhere. What's been your perspective as an insider while all that's been going on and the sport's been developing?
Yeah, well, I've been doing it a long time now. I've been fighting for almost 10 years. Obviously regulations are a good thing for fighter safety and all that. But, I mean, the sport's it's grown so much, and there's so much more money in it. The sponsors actually want to back it. And I remember when I started, people would actually ask what I did, because they could tell I was an athlete, and they'd ask what sport it is. I'd say, I'd say mixed martial arts. So I think we called it no old bar dash when we started. And people had no idea what it was. I'd have to explain it to them, and they'd be like, oh, that human cockfighting thing that they'd call it, So I mean, and now I have 60-year-old ladies coming up to me, you know, who saw my last fight and you know, obviously know the sport. And so, I mean, the sport's obviously growing, and I think it's obviously a large part to the UFC success. So I think it's only going to get bigger. I mean, like, especially UFC planning all these Brazil shows, and they're doing Sweden. I think they just booked they're kind of just going more international. So I think the sport in general is just going to explode.
Do you think it will ever be more popular than hockey in Canada?
I don't know. I mean, Dana White had that in his comments. He was getting kind of ostracized for it. But he said the biggest athlete to come out of Canada was St. Pierre, bigger than Wayne Gretzky, he said. So I know I get a lot of flack for that, but it might be true. I mean, the sport's obviously getting huge. I mean, they sold out the Rogers Centre in Toronto. It was like 66,000 people at the event. So, I mean, the sport's obviously getting huge. So I don't know if it'll get as big because there's 20 games a week on NHL on TV. So I don't think UFC is going to be putting on that many events.
Probably not in our lifetime. Maybe.
No.
Is there any favorite athlete you have out there as far as fighters other than Randy, like you mentioned?
My favorite athlete, I think, is George St. Pierre. I mean, just if you take his philosophy of training with all sorts of different athletes. I mean, she trains with gymnasts. He doesn't train with a lot of MMA guys. He goes and trains boxing with boxers and wrestling with wrestlers. And just the way he diversifies. And I mean, obviously, he's a great athlete. But just the way he goes about his training is kind of what I've been trying to mimic lately, going around and training with all sorts of different people. Just the way he's a 24-hour-a-day, athlete. You know, he's not that guy who goes and cheats. He doesn't drink, and he's, obviously, focused. So I think he'd be a guy to look up to for sure.
Yeah, it seems like these guys are getting popped left and right for these drugs these days. You know, they had a female and a male this week alone, this last week with Strike Force.
Yeah, and it's a lot more prevalent than people think. I mean, they can prove anyways. I mean, you've got to know how to go about it. But, I mean, it's definitely a lot more common than the people actually do get busted. So, I don't think you've got to be careful, that's for sure.
Yeah, it was kind of interesting. We had Sean Shirk on the show one time after his drug test there when Hermes Franco was also tested positive on the same fight, he tested some of his supplements that he got from Zions, which is a sponsor of the UFC, and they tested positive for this stuff that was banned that he tested positive for in the fight. So all of a sudden, it was taken off the shelves at Zions or at GNC, and I actually went into one of the GNC stores near my house and asked the guy about it, and he had no clue, but it was gone all of a sudden. And nobody ever told him why. So
yeah.
Some of this stuff.
Well, because it's been a study about tainted supplements, actually, and they're pretty common. I mean, some manufacturers have put something in there, and A lot of supplements at like GNC or health food stores don't even have to pass like FDA regulations. You could take in a bucket of sand and say this is some miracle protein, whatever, and you could sell it. You don't actually have to prove it's anything unless it's an actual drug. So, I mean, the ingredients in it could be anything for the most part. So, I'm sure a lot of the positive testing is stuff to do with that. And I know what Sean Shirk got busted for too. That's actually a natural testosterone in your body. It doesn't have to be an injected testosterone. When you start overtraining, your body will actually start producing that certain type of testosterone a little bit more, and that's the one he got busted for. So it's totally reasonable that maybe he wasn't doing it or not knowingly doing it. So I think there's it's not that hard to test positive. I know it's happening to a lot of Olympic athletes as well. You know, they take a supplement that they think is fine, and even sometimes over the counter, and it's makes them test positive.
Yeah, some guy in the UFC or used to be in the UFC, Sean McCoyle, the other day said that they should just let all fighters take whatever they want. If it doesn't work.
Good. The steroid Olympics, like the old Saturday Live skit.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Now, is there anybody that you want to thank or give a shout-out to before we let you go here?
I got a list that's taking me an hour to list off, but maybe I just want to thank all my friends who, like the real friends that stick with you when you're down. And I had a rough patch. I mean, I broke up my fiance last year and then, you know, had some losses and just a really bad year overall. And the business-wise, things went to hell. And, you know, and you have those friends who stick around. And, you know, really those who I'm fighting for now is the guys who stuck with me and the training partners and for those who stuck with me through the rough, that, you know, they're going to be there for the good now. So it's I got to thank those guys.
All right. Any final thoughts or predictions for your fight?
Yeah, this could be a quick one. I'm in better shape than I've been in a long time. And style-wise, the way I match up to this guy, I think it's going to be a quick fight. It's going to be a knockout or submission first round. And you know, I'm sure he's thinking the same thing, but it's not going to be a night.
All right. And where do people send their nickname idea for you?
I'm looking up on Facebook or even on Twitter, Advocate Anunnaki. And I'm rarely on there. I'm still learning the ropes on it. But you can hit me up on there and check it out. I'm definitely looking for suggestions.
All right. Well, it was great having you on, and best of luck, although I'm sure you're not going to need it. And we'll keep an eye on you and hopefully maybe have you on down the road again sometime.
Awesome. Thanks. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thank you.
All right. Good luck.
Take care.
Have a good night. So that's Victor Valamaki. Formerly known as the Matrix, I guess. You can call him. But he needs a new nickname, so another thing, you folks can pitch in to this show and try to help us out with, help our guests out with, get him a new nickname. And I think you got a new copy of Killer Elite, Tony, because I don't see any emails from guessers to the trivia question. Anyway, we got about 10 minutes left of showtime. And I don't really have any commentary myself to discuss. So, unless you have any rants and raves, Tony, I think we're going to call it a night.
Well, I ranted and raved earlier. I guess I'll be saving my rant and raves to discuss the fight card that I'll be at when we do our show next week.
Sweet. And we'll keep an eye out for that, and we'll definitely be coming up with some more content for the blog tonight, so check that out before you sign off for the night, everybody. And next week we're going to have a couple more MMA fighters on tap. I believe Justin Buchholz and somebody else from another card coming up towards the end of the month there, actually next month. But anyway, couple Vegas guys, and we'll probably get back to boxing the week after that. And I don't know when we're going to get back to your favorite topics for guests, Playboy models.
Yeah.
I don't know when that's going to happen again, but we'll see. We'll see. I'll keep it on the back burner.
Okay.
But that's all for me.
And
thanks for stopping by. Check out our sponsors. Check out the site. Check out fightradio.info for old shows. And see you next week.
Until then, this is the Tornado, and I'm out.
Adios.